Thank you, Sue. And our group has asked Osana to be our main speaker tonight.
October 15th of 2021. That means, God willing, in 6 days I'll be picking up 4 years. Not to any effort of my own, mind you. You guys have kept me safe and sane and sound for a very long time. It's the only thing that I had to rely on for the first 2.5 years of my sobriety was other alcoholics who knew how crazy I was and were willing to tell me exactly how insane I was behaving in that very moment. A little rude, kind of offensive, but I needed to hear it. I was born and raised in South Mississippi. I did not have a typical childhood, but I also didn't have an atypical childhood. There wasn't anything super out of the norm until I got older. My parents were married happily for a long time until they weren't. And then when they weren't, I went to live with my stepdad, and my mom was very happy with that. She didn't want to take care of kids. She never believed that she was going to be a parent or a good mom, so living with the stepdad was the best option for us in her mind. My little brother was born when I was 7, and we had a super weird relationship. My mom wasn't around, and my stepdad had to take care of everything else, so I took care of the baby, and I became an adult very quickly. Around 9, things in my life really started to shift. I had had a few drinks before, nothing crazy. I lived out in, you know, middle of nowhere, Mississippi, and then middle of nowhere, Georgia. So alcohol was a part of a family tradition. It was something that when you were deemed old enough and you had enough respect from the elders and you respected the elders enough, then drinking was permitted in the house. So at 9, things really started to change because drinking became less of an every now and then activity and something that my stepfather and I did together every night. My mom asked him for a divorce. He had been sober for 12 years, and immediately he went off the deep end. And when they say that alcoholism is a progressive disease, what is meant is that at any point in time, if I pick up again, it will be exactly as bad as it was when I put it down, and then it will get much worse. And that's exactly what happened in my life, in my family, in my household, is that my stepfather started to drink again, and there was no time in between a loving stepdad who wanted to take care of me and wanted to make sure I had the best in the world, and a stepdad who wanted nothing to do with me and that I became afraid of. There was no time. It was like I opened a door and he was standing there as a completely different person. And so life got really confusing for me at a very young age. But I didn't think that anything was abnormal. It wasn't that things weren't hard or that I wasn't upset. It just wasn't all that strange. I didn't know what strange was. I didn't know anything would be different. And I didn't know that something could be wrong or that it could be strange or that it could be out of the norm. So I just continued to live the way that I was living, like nothing was happening. The end of that time period, when I was 11, I moved in with my mom and my stepdad, and obviously her third husband at that point. And obviously, I had lived a very different life in Georgia. So moving back in with my mom and her new husband, who loved each other and loved me and wanted the best for me, was super confusing. I didn't understand why no one was sneaking into my room in the middle of the night and forcing me to do things that I didn't know if I wanted to do or I didn't want to do. I didn't understand why no one was screaming at me, there wasn't yelling, there wasn't a constant need for me to be present for someone else. I just freaked out completely, lost my mind. I was doing terrible in school. I had always been an A-plus student, and I was doing terrible in school. I was fighting with my mom and her husband all the time, and we were constantly just at war with one another, and I could never understand why they didn't get me. Why was I so different? Why was I so, like, misunderstood by my family and friends? Everyone that I was around just couldn't understand what I was going through, why I was feeling the way that I was feeling, or what was happening in my mind. My life was great. Back home, when I was with my parents, everything was amazing. But when I left that house, I was so lost, you know, and the fighting in myself just would not stop. So at some point, my mom and her third husband ended up getting divorced, and I was 16 when this happened, and I had already been experimenting with pot, and I had already been drinking a little bit with my friends, but when they got divorced, I lost a sense of peace and security that I didn't know I had, and I didn't know that I needed, but was definitely something that was just gone immediately. I remember we painted my bedroom, my favorite color, when I was 15, and then we repainted it when I was 17. And my stepdad taught me everything that I knew, like everything he knew about how to paint a room. And that was such a beautiful memory for me that I couldn't sleep in that room anymore. I slept on the couch for 2 years until I moved out. And I moved out 7 days after my 17th birthday. I haven't celebrated a birthday since I was 16 until last year. And it was just constant trauma and me reinforcing that trauma over and over and over again. I wanted to relive it. I wanted to feel bad. I wanted to hate everyone around me. And that sounds so sick, but that's exactly what I am. I'm sick. I want to feel bad, and I want others to feel bad with me. And I want all of those horrible memories to replay until I just can't stand anymore. And that's when I get to drink. And that was my favorite thing to do. So when I was 17, I enlisted in the United States Army. It was an escape route for me. I didn't want to go to college. I didn't want to go to trade school. I was not going to get married to a rich man. So the Army was the perfect way for me to not only make money, but get everything that I needed, a place to stay, friends, whatever. But it was the perfect way for me to die a hero's death, because I just wanted to die. I didn't care what kind of death it was, but all I could think about from the time I was probably 13 until I was into my 20s was about how much I wanted to die. I didn't want to be here anymore. I didn't want to feel any of the feelings that I was feeling. Drinking helped me a lot at first because it numbed me so much. I just didn't have to think about anything. And whatever happened, that was somebody else's business, not mine. I don't have to wake up tomorrow and think about that. You can, but I'm not going to. So when I went into the Army, I was convinced that I was like going to make a career out of it, and I was going to go to places that I couldn't talk to my family, and they'd never have to see me or hear from me again, and I'd never have to talk to them again either. And I would die and in some war zone, and I would have, you know, a great memorial, and everybody would be sad, but, you know, it would be worth something. It wouldn't all be in vain. Obviously, that did not happen, and I was very disappointed when it didn't happen. So when I was 18, I was discharged for medical purposes, and my alcoholism had already been peaking, but at that point, I was so disappointed in myself, and I was so disgusted with the person in the mirror that all I wanted to do was drown myself out with alcohol. So I did. Every day that I could get my hands on it, anyone that I could get my hands on it from, and at some point I started to experiment with pills as well. Everything was awful, and I would tell everyone how awful my life was and how awful growing up was, and that was just how it was going to be forever. Everything was going to be terrible until I died. And I was really hoping that would be sooner or later. And so when I turned 19, I had met my biological father. When I joined the Army, I had to. He left my life when I was 2, and my mom never really talked about him. So I was like, oh, he's probably a great guy. And he's just like, he's out here living this life and like wishing that I was a part of his life. And, you know, if we're reunited, everything will be fine. Everything was not fine. We fought constantly as well. I had so much built up resentment against him due to the things that had happened to me as a child, things he was never involved in and he never knew about. So when I was 19, I got a phone call from his fiance that just said, he's gone. And my dad had committed suicide by cop. It was probably the most painful experience I had had up to that point. And if you think that I got sober or that I dealt with it in a normal way, I absolutely did not. I spent 2 years in a blackout, hoping that I just wouldn't have to deal with those feelings or thoughts anymore, and I would never have to think about that again. I felt constant rage. The fact that people were outside smiling and the sun was shining, and my friends had their parents, absolutely made me feel alone. I couldn't feel anything but anger and sadness and fear, and I couldn't talk about sadness and I couldn't talk about fear, so it just came out as anger all the time. I was angry with everyone. I frequented bars like before I was even 21 because my mom had these friends that she knew that would let me in, and I was getting fights like at my mom's friends, bars, underage, like totally hammered. And never once did my mom say anything to me. So I thought that she was like cool with everything, you know, and then I got sober and she was like, yeah, it was a little embarrassing. turns out. So at 21, I decided, at 21, I woke up one day and I realized that I was dying. I was 95 pounds, which is 20 pounds lighter than I am right now, just for reference. I was missing pieces of hair. I was pulling my hair in my sleep, so I had bald patches. I hadn't looked in a mirror in years. I don't even know. I had ruined every relationship I had ever been in. I was not good at them by any means. And I refused to believe that it was because my father was absent or because my mom was not great or because my stepfathers were abusive. Like, it wasn't any of that stuff. It was just like, yeah, well, I just don't look in the mirror, you know? It was a part of my personality. So, at 21, I wake up one day and I realize that I'm dying. And I know that AA is available. And it takes everything in me to gather the strength to go to an 11 a.m. meeting because I'm not sleeping and I'm drinking all through the night and I'm drinking so much that when I go to work, I still smell like alcohol. And when I sweat at work, the general manager doesn't stand anywhere near me. Like he will stand 5 feet away because I smell like whiskey. And like nobody can tolerate me at work either, so I work by myself and I'm like, yeah, that's awesome, I work alone, they trust me, they don't trust me, no one trusts me, I'm just an asshole. So I get to this point, this turning point, if you will, that I know things aren't going right and I know that this isn't normal. And I was Baker acted when I was 18 years old and my mom, of all people, called me and she said, you know, that's not normal. And I was like, okay, Stephanie, you know, like, what do you know? What do you know about normal? But 3 years later, I looked back on that moment and I was like, oh my God, I tried to throw myself off of a balcony, like while I was drinking over nothing. That is not normal. You know, maybe she was right. I didn't believe that I was insane, but I did believe that I wasn't normal. So I came into an AA meeting for the very first time when I was 21. That was February 28th of 2019. That was 2 years to the day after my dad died. And when I came into this meeting, not this one, but when I went into that meeting, I thought that everything was going to get instantly and like exponentially better. And nothing got better at all. I wanted to drink so bad, I couldn't think straight. The person that I was with at the time was tired of hearing about AA. So I just decided after like doing 60 days, like maybe I just don't need to go to meetings. You know, maybe I'm one of those people. I can do this without going to meetings. And it turned out I can do that for a while. I did that for 2.5 years. But I will tell you that in that 2.5 year timeline, at no point did I ever stop thinking, please just don't wake me up tomorrow. There was nothing in me that was happy or satisfied. I didn't want to do anything. I was burnt out all the time. I mean, it didn't matter how long I worked at a job or where I went or who I was with. I was just sick and tired of everyone and everything all of the time. And it could be instant, like 3 seconds. And I'm like, yeah, I'm done with this. I mean, you're getting on this. I gotta go. I didn't stick around anywhere. I bailed on everyone that I knew. I wasn't in a relationship for a long time because I thought that my destiny in life was to make $1 million. I didn't know how I was going to do that, but I was going to make $1 million. And then move to the mountains in Colorado and build myself basically a prison of solitude with me and like a dog, you know, that was just going to sleep on the porch for the rest of our lives. And I would just never get married or talk to anyone ever. You know, I was just going to, like, be in the wilderness. That sounds super crazy now, you know. It sounded great back then, but that's because my solution is always to isolate and find a way to just be away from everyone so that I can drink more and I can be worse. And at some point, being worse means I got to be around people because if I'm going to be awful, I got to be awful with someone, you know. You know, this was my dream. This was what I was going to do. And so in this 2.5 year time period, I start working at this place and, I'm working in a kitchen and I love it, but only when it goes my way, you know, only when it's easy. So as I'm working in this kitchen, everybody after work goes to the bar right next door. And so I go to the bar right next door. I mean, why not? You know, those are all my friends because I only see people at work. I don't go anywhere or do anything. So I go to the bar next door and I keep going and I go every night with them after work. Even if I have to open the next day, I'm going every single night with them after work. And nothing is tempting me. You know, I'm not tempted at all. I don't want to drink. I don't want to do drugs. I don't want to do anything. I'm good. You know, I've got this. I'm solid. I'm sitting at 3 years sober, doing awesome with no AA, and I brag about it. And so when I got to a point where I was like, you know, maybe I can just smoke a little pot. You know, like I can do that. It's manageable. It's not that big of a deal. Everyone does it. You know, I convinced myself that I was doing it to keep me from being stressed out at work. You know, because being a line cook is really stressful. So I didn't want to be stressed out at work. I needed to be focused. I needed to be like in my groove. You know, so that started very innocent, and then it just exploded into like finding out when my coworkers would be available to like deal drugs with me. And then of course we got to hang out because I don't have anybody to hang out with. My roommates smoke, but they're weird. I don't like them, so I don't want to hang out with them. You know, I'm gonna get paranoid around those guys. So you know, I gotta hang out with my coworkers. And none of them ever wanted to hang out with me. I don't know why. It was not like I screamed on the line every day or like I was just totally unbearable every single morning. I was not drinking, and I swear to God, I was hungover every fucking day that I was going into work. It was awful. So like I'm this intolerable person and I'm starting to realize how intolerable I am. And that's not cool. I don't want to know that. I don't want to know that about myself. I need to numb these feelings out right now. And so I walked out of the restaurant one day. I got off early. I got off around noon. And I knew that the bar next door was open and they were going to be serving alcohol. And I walked into that bar room. And for whatever reason, still to this day, I cannot tell you why they were not serving. And I walked out and I thought, all right, maybe I should go to a meeting, you know. So 3 weeks later, after being in even more pain, I went to a meeting with a girl that I was dating, which is like, of course, you know, that's exactly how my life goes. And so we went to this meeting, and the person that was chairing the meeting, I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said yes, and it was great. And I started working at this diner, and I'm doing overnights, and I'm so ungrateful for this job. As a matter of fact, all I can think about when I'm there is, like, I fucking hate this job. I can't stand these people. There are too many drunk people here. I'm not drinking. What's wrong with them? You know, why are they in the middle of this? So I stopped smoking pot in October of 2021, and it wasn't like a, oh, I'm going to stop to make everything better. I wasn't thinking that, you know. I was like, I'm just tired of getting paranoid. This sucks. Bored, you know, like, give me something else, anything. And then I kind of realized, like, I didn't want to drink, so I was like, all right, no pop, no alcohol, cool, we can do this, got a sponsor, doing it, whatever. I only went to that one meeting every week, and I thought, again, that that would keep me super sober, you know. I didn't know that there was, like a guide to this, you know, like, go to meetings as often as you can, like, that sounds terrible. So my sponsor dropped me like a rock at one point because I just was a mess. I was a total disaster. If anybody remembers me from 3 years ago, no, you don't. But I had like one half pink hair and one half black, and then my eyebrows were, yeah, I had some real issues, man. And like everybody knew, you know, nobody was like, oh, she's super sober and like in a really great place in her life. So like I'm a mess with my sponsor constantly. And so finally she just goes like, man, I don't know what to do with you anymore. I can't do it. So she dropped me and I dropped AA. Duh. A month later, I'm like, why do I still want to drink? And why do I want to die? And why is nothing going my way? And so this woman, this rancid woman, I'm just kidding, I love her so much, just the worst person I've ever met. She like comes into the diner. She's my relief every morning. I work 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. She works 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. And so she comes in every morning to relieve me. And every single morning, hey, there's a meeting at Sobriety at 8 o'clock. I'm not going over there. Okay, that's fine. Every single morning, like clockwork. Hey, there's a meeting at Serenity at 8 o'clock. Hey, you don't sound like you're doing so great. There's a meeting at Serenity at 8 o'clock. So at some point, I decided I'm going to go to Serenity at 8 o'clock to show you that, like, this isn't going to work for me. I'm not you. I'm not one of these alcoholics that, like, needs to go to meetings. There's just, like, other stuff wrong with me, you know, like psychiatric shit maybe. I don't know. And so, like, I go that morning. I'm not going to be in AA. I'm not getting a sponsor. I'm not doing the steps. And so I get a sponsor that morning, and we start working the steps, you know? And it's kind of lazy. It's lackadaisical as I look back on it now. But it started something in me that I really didn't expect. I was convinced that I was going to be like the tattoo pierced girl, goth girl with the crazy hair, like for the rest of my life. Like that was my personality. That's who I was going to be. My life was terrible. You can see it on my face, you know? And one day she sits down with me. I was just telling my sponsor that one day she sits down with me and she goes, this has got to go. You're a mess. And you look like it. You know, and she was right, and I was so offended. I was so offended because I was like, how dare you come for my personality? Like, this is who I am. But all I ever did in my life was cover up who I really was and who I really wanted to be. Because if I woke up one day and I said to my friends or my family members that I wanted to be a soft-spoken woman of God, I would have been laughed at. And even if I wouldn't have been laughed at, I was convinced I would have been. So I just didn't want to be that person. So I constantly hid who I was. And I think at that point, that's when I started this small amount of change. And it was very small. And I really didn't want to do any of the things that you guys were doing. But I kind of did the bare minimum for like 2 years, you know? And it was great being in AA, and it was super fun, and I had so many friends, and I talked to people all the time, and everybody knew things about my life and what was going on, but I'd never been honest with a sponsor. I'd never been honest with myself. I'd never been honest with any of my friends or my family members. And so about 2.5 years in, I had a doctor's appointment where I found out that I will never have children. And it sent me so deep into a spiral that I wanted to lay in my bed and never get out. Never. Worst things had happened in my life. And this was the thing that wanted to take me out of AA. And that I wanted to take me out of AA. And I had spoken at YANA. And this group of people who I had met in passing started inviting me places. And I knew that if I was going to stay sober, that I needed to go with them. I might as well. What I didn't know is that those people would become a part of my family. I would meet most of my closest friends in the entire world in that room or because of that room. I have a completely different perspective on life now, and my sponsor says that I do more for her than she does for me, but I just can't believe that sometimes, because I'm a person. I'm not just walking around waiting to die anymore. I have a love for life. I am back working at that diner overnights, and I love my job today. I'm so happy there that like I can't even fathom going anywhere else right now. Not that it matters. I started my degree. I finished my technical program. I've done so many things that I never thought were possible, because I couldn't commit. I couldn't keep up, and I was so convinced that I was just going to be shit the rest of my life. I was going to be awful. You know, whether it was to somebody else or in somebody else's eyes, it didn't matter. But that's how I was always going to be. I was never going to be a good woman. I was never going to get married. I was never going to talk to my mother again or my grandparents. And I speak to my mother once a week now, which is the hardest thing I have ever done. She is as crazy as I am when I'm drinking, man. And I don't like other people's defects of character, because I have them too. And especially not hers, because she passed them right down, you know. I can't believe the life that I have today. And my grandparents, we've always had a tumultuous relationship, but I called to make an amends with my grandmother about 2 years ago, and when I did that, she said, "I knew that you were calling to do this because your granddad has been sober for 8 years." And this year, I get to go on a vacation to watch him pick up his decade. And there is nothing in this world like reconnecting with the ground, with where my feet are. I feel like a human being these days, which is really not something I ever felt. I have felt things in this program that I didn't think were real, The last time I came up here, I talked about my sisters, all of these women in this program, in my pigeon family that have taken me in and that treat me like I'm crazy when I'm being crazy and that treat me like I'm fragile when I need to be treated like I'm fragile. Sponsoring other women has been the highlight of my life. It is the most beautiful experience I've ever had. Second only to like watching a child be born, dude. It's the most miraculous thing, like watching someone come back to life. I stand firm in who I am now, and I believe very strongly in a higher power that keeps me safe, sane, and sober. And I never want to turn away from this program. I will. I absolutely will. It doesn't mean that I won't, and it doesn't mean that I'll do it forever. I will turn my back on this program in an instant because there's something shiny over there, and I have 10 minutes of free time. But everything that I do now, everything I try to do now, I practice these principles in every affair that I can think of when I'm able to think, because it's not always like that. I'm not always perfect. I'm not always in my right mind. And sometimes I'm just straight up like just a thing walking around doing stuff and saying words, you know. I'm not always this woman, but today I get to be this woman, and I get to teach other women how to be this woman as well. And that is a blessing that I just never thought I deserved. And I never thought would come to fruition for me. I'm so grateful to be here. And I've been thinking about this way too much for the last 2 months. Kim, you asked me super early, so I've had a lot of time to think on this. I hope today that my primary purpose was fulfilled. That primary purpose is to stay sober and to teach and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And if I've done even a modicum or an iota of that today, I've done what I came here to do and what God planned for me to do. Thank you.